Welcome to Carry the Fire, a podcast where we explore the big questions of life through the lens of the good, the true, and the beautiful. I'm your host, Dustin Kensrue, and my hope is that through these conversations with people of diverse and divergent backgrounds and beliefs, we can glimpse the world anew through each other's unique perspectives.
I see alignment as something that you stamp on your character sheet to remind you what is your intent that you're starting with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, do I follow rules or not follow rules? And then it's like, am I a good person or not a good person? Or am I somewhere in between? And I think that is a really interesting way for us to look at ourselves and how we view our own morality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you think about who you are and who you think that you've started out as. And like, do you think that you are striving to be the best person that you are or not?
Hey, everybody. Today on the pod, we are joined by Eric Silver. Eric is one of the hosts of my very favorite podcast, Join the Party. Join the Party is a collaborative storytelling podcast using the framework and mechanics of the popular game Dungeons & Dragons. And Eric is the DM, or Dungeon Master, of the Join the Party game. You'll hear more about what that means as we go. I know a decent portion of you are probably thinking that maybe you'll skip this one, that D&D is definitely not for you. But if you stick around, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised and intrigued. Eric and I talk about the magic of collaborative storytelling. We discuss the way that he tries to craft Join the Party to be open and inviting in a variety of ways. And he shares how his Jewish heritage and faith influence his storytelling. Let's dive in. Well, thanks for doing it, man. Thanks for coming on. It's funny talking. It's funny seeing you talk because I've listened to so many Join the Party episodes in the past couple months that like it's weird seeing, like, I'm so used to just hearing your voice.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Listen, I totally hear you, and now you can see where all the magic happens in the studio.
Wait, so yeah, where are you at?
So we are in the Multitude Studio,
okay,
which is where all the Multitude shows record, including Join the Party. Usually we can have like up to six people in here, but we have four mics that are set up for you to just have a casual conversation. But the studio computer is on the other side of, like, there's a window right here. So I'm like remotely recording because I have these things wirelessly. So it's always just like a fun thing to demonstrate. But it's like the camera is on the other side of the room so that I can see the recording happening. So I'm looking at a monitor which is attached to a computer in another room, and then like I'm looking at it right there, and I'm also looking at you.
Okay.
So that's why it's so far away, is so I can see everything. But this is where I DM. This is like my DM, my dungeon master space right here. Like, this is my seat.
That spot, okay.
Yeah. Like, I usually have all my dice so that I have my notes and my computer. There's another one. There's, like, another table that, like, has a top and a bottom, and I use that so I can put my computer on top of my dice tray below.
Nice.
But, yeah, this is where the magic happens.
Awesome. I love Join the Party. And as I emailed you, all three of my kids are super into it now, and especially the middle one is like obsessed, to where it's like they're all big readers, but she's listening to it building Lego, she's listening to it going on a walk, she's listening to it going to bed, and we're like, okay, but bedtime is like actual reading time. I know this is a story, but like you gotta like work something else in there. But yeah, they're so stoked on it. But I feel like, so I'm newish, pretty new to D&D. I played like two sessions a couple years ago with some people on tour and loved it, but I just don't know anyone. I didn't know anyone who played. How did I get? Oh, my kids started really asking to play, and so I was like, all right, I'm gonna figure out how to do it. I'm gonna get a starter pack, and so I got the Icespire Peak and just kind of figured out how to do it and started DMing for the three of them and my brother. And now started DMing for five other people, like a group of friends, and now another, and my kids and three other kids, which is pretty intense.
Oh my God. And well, welcome to the coven of Dungeon Masters,
thank
who will
you.
Probably never be able to be a player ever again.
Yeah, well, I got to play. I'm getting to play one game right now, so I'm really excited about that. But it's so cool. But I've started talking about it a little bit with some of the guests, but I haven't really dug way into it. Could you maybe explain to people like what is D&D? You know, people, I think, have ideas of what that might be, and usually those are probably not very accurate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, the fact that your kids found out about it really demonstrates the proliferation of Dungeons and Dragons in media. This is something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, because Join the Party is an extension of this new growth, which is being able to watch or listen to people play Dungeons and Dragons. So it's really interesting. You might know Dungeons and Dragons from Stranger Things or Community or Freaks and Geeks. And it really is kind of what it is on its face. It is a role-playing game where the majority of people take on characters and heroes or villains or however you want to play, or complicated people, and participate in an adventure that is put together and run like a dungeon master. You have to imagine, like, if this was a movie, the characters are the actors and they're improvising and writing their own lines, but the dungeon master controls like everything else. Mm-hmm. Like they're showing the camera, they're building the set, they're writing the plot. Another way to think about this is, like,
and they're acting all the other characters.
Right, and they're acting all of the characters who are not the main characters, which is a strange way to think about it. It's like only the characters that support the plot. It's another way to think about this is like an author writes a novel, but three of the main characters somehow are their own, like, have free will and can choose to do whatever they want.
That's
so interesting. It's like you put these characters in a room, and you might assume, like, oh, and then they go to the birthday party, but one of them is like, actually, I'm feeling like not actually that into it right now, so I'm going to stay at home. And how does the novelist respond to the fact that the character doesn't want to go? And that could be for emotional reasons. It could be for danger reasons. It could be because they actually don't like the person whose birthday party is. It could be that the cake is poisoned and they know that there's going to be an assassin there. And, like, being able to work with that is the beauty of the game, because it really is communal storytelling. One person lays it out, but then everybody gets to put a hand on the ball and be like, I want the story to go this way. I want to explore this theme. I'm feeling this way, or I like how these characters interact. And you just got to let it go. Now, Dungeons and Dragons used to be just a game you played in the basement, and then maybe you would talk to someone about D&D when you went to a gaming convention in Indiana that everybody goes to. But now, with videos and podcasts and streams that you can watch, Dungeons and Dragons has had such a resurgence, which is just so beautiful, because it is a game that facilitates storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's just like you're putting a bunch of rules to help the game moves forward. Something that we realized when Amanda, one of our players, started playing Dungeons and Dragons for the first time, her brother would play D&D like in their basement, and she'd be like, you can just like say what happens? That's so strange. But really, the character sheet and the dice are the whims of fate that take the story in one direction or another. Like, you can't just say, I do this. You say, I want to do this. And depending on how good your character or bad your character is at doing the thing, and the whims of fate that is demonstrated by the 20-sided die, that dictates how the story goes. And that's incredibly interesting. And like, something is outside of your control, even the actors and the novelist and the director that can't even do it. It's like, what happens when the whims of storytelling, like, take you in one way or another. And that's why D&D is so great. And the fact that people are finding it and watching it and listening to it and responding to it, now these, like, media extensions of this game, has been so much fun. And I think about it all the time, because that's what I do on our podcast. It was born out of the first real wave of D&D media and trying to do it the best way that we could to bring in as many people as possible.
Yeah, so, I mean, I like how you're emphasizing the story aspect. We have a bunch of different ways that we tell stories as mm-hmm. a culture now, but what do you think is, I don't know, what's unique about D&D, like why should someone care about that when there's, you know, a really cool TV show or a, I don't know, a great novel?
That's a good question. I think as much as I love watching TV and reading, it's passive. Like someone makes it and then you respond to it either in your own brain or like on your side, but you don't get to do anything with the piece of media. Mm. Like it's there and then you can go on Twitter and talk about it. but that's not going to change the static piece of media that's in front of you. Like you can't yell at the book enough to change, and then the book changes, you know? And that's very beautiful because it creates a one-sided relationship between you and the piece of media. And that is the whole, like, the author is dead. Don't worry about what the author intended. It's what you get from the work. And that's like the basis of literary criticism. So I'm not bagging on that at all, but it's, in Dungeons and Dragons, you get to impact the storytelling. Like it is no one story. The Dungeon Master lays it all out, but everyone has a chance to move it and change it in the way that they want to, and you are really wading into the story. Another thing that it is a game, it is the beauty of games that you can do with other people. It is a great way to understand the inner workings of another person, whether that person is your coworker who you is just kind of an acquaintance or someone who you've known for 20 years. Like you don't know what they would do in a relationship. You don't know what they would do if they're confronted by like a warlock who put a curse on a town, or how do they respond to 5 wolves running up on them in a woods? Like you really start to learn about these people because I know this might surprise you, but the characters are just actually extensions of ourselves. And it's really just playing out things that we already believe and seeing it happen in a storybook. And the fact that you're doing this with kids is amazing because like they don't have the like pretensions that I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like I have an English degree, I have an English education degree. I've been reading and analyzing books and media for like 15, 20 years of my life, right? Like since I knew I knew I could have an opinion about things, I've been breaking it down. But with kids, it's like they're just like, yeah, let's play this game and I'm going to make some choices and I want to do this thing and have fun with each other. And they learn so much about what they control, what they can't control, but also like how creativity works, how storytelling works, how you need to have collaboration. I mean, it's beautiful, especially as a podcaster and writer myself. I love telling stories with Dungeons and Dragons because it's not just up to me. Like I like setting the table and then seeing what people do with it. The way that I described it once is being the Dungeon Master is like building a house. And you could be like, oh, I'm going to make sure that there's like 4 stories so that it's cool if they can be separated. Or like, I'm going to make a big backyard. And then you let people walk in and they turn what you built into a home. Mm. Like, what do they do in that backyard? Do they play football in it? Do they play croquet in it? Do they like have relay races in the backyard? Do they build a fire pit? Like on the 4th floor, do they turn the attic into like a very emotional or a very important like milestone for one of their children as they feel like that they want their own bedroom and they want to feel independent? Like that's not something I can control as the architect, but they are the ones who are doing the living and the emoting in and the like experiences in the house.
That's a cool way to think about it. Another thing, as you're talking, I thought of the other day too, was I feel like if anyone read like a choose your own adventure book as a kid and dug that, like this is like that on steroids with people, like in a community. Like it's that that little choice that you make, you're like, oh, that's cool. Like the whole thing is that. The whole thing is,
and if you have a Dungeon Master that cares about you, like they will notice when you make those choices and will reward you for it. Like, the only thing that I don't like about Choose Your Own Adventure books is it always feels like there is a correct path, but there is no correct path. It's like if there was an infinite number of Choose Your Own Adventure pages, and this story would go on for thousands and thousands of pages, but also the book was compassionate about you and, like, cared about you, and you could tell the book and be like, hey, I think it would be really cool if these two characters got together. And the book would be like, okay, yeah, that sounds neat. And then it happens.
Have you played with kids at all? Have you DM'd for kids at all?
I haven't yet.
Okay.
I think it would be really fun. And I was also a high school English teacher before all of this podcasting mm-hmm. stuff happened to me. So, like, I would love to play Dungeons & Dragons with high schoolers. I really would. Like, even if they were into it or not into it, and you can really strip it down and make it into this other thing, just playing any sort of tabletop role-playing game. Like, there are these, like, one-pagers that are so simple to play and are so much fun that I've pulled out in a bunch of different situations. So I would love to play with high schoolers. Like, I know their brains are working on overdrive, especially the beautiful things that come out of Gen Z's heads that I've seen on TikTok and, like, on Twitter and Instagram. Like, I want to see what they're going to create.
Yeah, it's been cool playing my watching my kids like kind of starting to get the role-playing aspect and you know, and that it's not just a game, which it is a game too. Like, it's and I guess that's another topic I'd highlight. Like, if you like playing cool board games, like, this is a board game on steroids. Like, it's just opened up, like, but you're still, it has those fun kind of game mechanics. And
well, here's my question for you, as someone who's played with their literal kids. Like, have you learned things about your children that you didn't know before playing D&D? It can even be, like, small things, but, like, I'd love to know, like, if you have a deeper understanding of your children after DMing for them.
I don't know if I could put it, like, break it all down, but, like, watching them create their characters and stuff, like, talking through that, you see these little things come out. You see, like, you know, my oldest is playing a paladin in the first game we started, and you can see that, like, this is, it's not all of her, right? But it's like a fragment of her that's kind of like amplified into this thing. And, or like my, my middle one is like, her brain is just super, works amazing and different than everything else. And her, I think her best thing she's done yet, she's playing a bard. And so for everyone listening, a bard is kind of, it's a broad category, but it's like a generally a performer and fighter. They can use magic too. And there's a lot you can do with it. But I've been encouraging her to like explore that. And so she got this magic cloak out of a shipwreck on one of the, where they were looking for treasure. They got this, and it can change to whatever, like, it can look like whatever she wants, basically. And so they're
nice.
They're walking through the woods, and she's like, okay. Well, first she was like, I know. Okay. I was like, what's it look like? She's like, it's a giant pineapple on it. 'Cause she's freaking obsessed with pineapples. I was like, oh, great. And, so she's starting out, she's like, okay, my cloak. And I was like, if it looks like a pineapple again, like, I might have something eat it. But she's like, no, it's not a pineapple. And she's like, okay, so I'm singing a song as we walk, and the cape or the robe is like, has the lyrics scrolling down it so everyone can sing along. And I was like, that's amazing. She's like, I can hang it up in like the pub and people can sing. And yeah, so it's pretty rad.
I love that. And I have this thought about bards, because when you are creating, and you'll probably agree with me as someone who makes music at professionally, like, there is something about wanting to be a character. And literally the thing about bards is that art is magic, which is something that's like so incredibly on the nose for me as someone who's like a professional artist and podcaster and writer, that I'm just like, who are the types of people that are gravitated towards this that need to like explore that? And I think that what your child has done is so beautiful and like just open. It's just like, I just want everyone to sing along. And like, that's so without the pretension that I fear of so many people who play bards, that like, I love, that's so amazing. Yeah. Like, I love that.
Yeah, so it's just little things watching. It's like you see their character from different angles. So I don't know if it's like anything like super new, but it's maybe like a deeper look or a I don't know.
No, but I think that that's beautiful, because you're in a situation that would never happen. And like, you're just seeing them, even if it is an amplified version of who they already are. Like, when would you have a situation in real life where you can give one of your children like something that looks like anything and they will be able to answer truthfully what it is? Like, that's really awesome.
Yeah. I'm looking at all this stuff through like the lens of the good, the true, and the beautiful, and I felt like one of the aspects that'd be interesting to talk about in regards to like D&D would be the alignment system, which is an interesting concept. Basically, you have two kind of alignments. You are either good, neutral, or evil, and then you are either lawful, neutral, or chaotic. And it kind of, you can be lawful, good, you can be chaotic, neutral, like all these different combinations of those. It's kind of an interesting thing. It's sometimes, I mean, you've talked a little bit about on JTP and some of the after parties, but yeah, what are your general thoughts right now on alignments? Like, is that a helpful way to think about things?
For sure. I think that alignment is very good. I'm starting to realize from playing this game so much and really trying to like dive into the game mechanics of it, like, how does it facilitate you understanding who your character is? And now I see alignment as something that you stamp on your character sheet to remind you what is your intent that you're starting with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, do I follow rules or not follow rules? And then it's like, am I a good person or not a good person? Or am I somewhere in between? And I think that is a really interesting way for us to look at ourselves and how we view our own morality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you think about who you are and who you think that you've started out as. Like, are you someone who follows rules? Are you someone who doesn't? And like, do you think that you are striving to be the best person that you are or not? And like, it should be reductive because you're trying to just put something on a character sheet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But from there, you change so much like we change and how we view ourselves and our morality and how that ties to, you know, your religious beliefs and your like code of conduct and everything. It's so interesting thinking about also what lawful versus chaotic means. Like, we could talk about what good, neutral, and evil means to death, but the thing that they have introduced in Dungeons & Dragons is lawful versus chaotic. And now, especially now, with all of the protesting for Black Lives Matter and all of the black people that have been unfair, and people of color have been unfairly targeted by the police and have been killed, it's like, do morality and laws don't necessarily function with each other.
Yep.
Like, if there is a law that is unjust, are you then chaotic for not following that law? Or do you have an or is it about like the laws inside of yourself that you follow a strict code? And then what is that code and how does that jive with the general like code and laws of society?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that becomes like really interesting as you look at what the world around you considers to be the law and what you personally in your own morals can decide to be the law. Like chaotic, yeah, it just feels reductive when you try to think of what that, like, I don't think that the opposite of lawful is chaotic. I feel like the opposite of lawful is like, do you use the laws to be proactive or not passive? When I think about this, is like, you have lawful and chaotic on one side. Do you have a moral code or not? And then you have, do you use that lack of or a lot of moral code to do something or not do something? Because like, you can be super lawful and use that to go out and do everything, or you can use that code to be like, oh, someone else got it. Like, I believe in the police or the city guard, and they're gonna, or the king, and they're gonna take care of it. So it's very murky, and it should be, because it's like, how do we examine what is good and evil within ourselves instead of like seeing how we grow or not?
Yeah, so there's like, there can be a kind of a blind trust in a lawfulness,
right,
which kind of we see a lot of right now, where it's like, well, you know, this is just the way everything is, so that must be right, right? And it's, there's like a, I guess there's a conflation a lot of times with lawful and good, and that can be unhelpful.
Yeah. But again, it's just something you stamp on your character sheet. I mean, you will be faced with so many choices you'll have to make that go against or don't go against your moral code or what you see as good or evil, is that, you know, it might not matter what you wrote down in the first place because your character will grow and everything. Especially because Dungeons & Dragons, you're supposed, and as the protagonist, you are probably the hero in whatever that means. So it always is going to get complicated as this story gets told. If you always did the right thing, I mean, I guess you maybe we're in a 1940s Western, and I guess that's the kind of game you want to play, or you want to be in like the first issues of Superman. But there's always probably going to be something complicating because you want to tell an interesting story.
Yeah. As a player now, I think it used to be in the older editions where you generally were playing good characters only, mm-hmm. and now you have the option to play kind of whatever kind of character you want.
I think there was the assumption that you were going to play a hero, and it was very much like, I'm going to beat whatever the Dungeon Master is putting out there. But in the 5th edition, I mean, you have to, for the people who don't know this about Dungeons and Dragons, like, this game has been going on since the 1970s, and like, it has been iterated on and changed in so many ways, and now they're really leaning into the storytelling aspect. Mm-hmm. This is the 5th edition, so they're really leaning into the fact that you can just set this up, play with whoever you want, and play the story that you want to create alongside the Dungeon Master, who is like the arbiter or the referee or the storyteller.
So now that you kind of, well, I guess it's more common than now that you could play like an evil character. And there's like a term, murder hobo, that's talking about yeah. people who are just brutal in the game, taking what they want, killing people. Do you think that that's like something that could be like harmful to be playing as that kind of character?
Yeah, I think that this, you know, it's interesting for me because the majority of the Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games that I play is for media consumption. Mm-hmm. And as the Dungeon Master and someone running this podcast, it's like, I want to tell a good story. So I'm willing to be ambiguous about these things and put characters in situations, but I have trusted that my characters and my players, who are also podcasters and are running the show with me, are going to do good storytelling, make good storytelling choices.
Yeah.
If I went in and I'm like, I'm going to do this podcast and like, I'm going to tell this story. And I'm like, all right, the king has brought you in front of them. And they're like, I'm going to stab the king. And I'm like, what? And they're like, no, I'm totally going to stab him and eat his eyes. I'm like, no, why would you do that? If there was a good story reason of why they would stab the king, like, go for it. But I think that we've all have this like implicit contract with each other that we want to tell the story and it's going to be interesting. And that is also the best tables that I've been a part of, is we want to do something, even if we do something bold, it is only to further the action and we all have fun. When you are a murder hobo, and remember, Dungeons and Dragons is a game. You can play it however you want. You can let out whatever things you have and whatever you want to see in the world. If you are a murder hobo, you want to do the thing like you're in a video game, right? You want to go up to people, you want to punt, hit them with swords, you want to take all their money and go. Like, we've all played Skyrim or Legend of Zelda or all of these where you just like go in and you kind of just like take all their stuff and leave. Like, and if that's the kind of game you want to play, I can point you towards many video games that will indulge that and will not take up five other people's time.
Yeah.
Like, will not take up the time and energy of people who want to play this with you. But I do feel like it's harmful in that it's a very selfish way to play.
Yeah.
Is like, even if everyone wants to do it, it's like, I only want to go and like care about my bloodlust and my cold lust, and like, that's it. Like, that's not a story, that's a video game.
Yeah. So do you feel responsibility as the DM? Sorry, we should say DM is Dungeon Master. If we say
yes.
That's the person kind of running the game. Do you feel responsibility as a DM to bring any sort of moral accountability to campaign? The thing that I came to mind, and this is a slight spoiler, so I won't say the name of who she killed, but Inara kills her first like main kill. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
And you have her haunted by this, even though she's like, she's trying to become an assassin and like, but you bring some kind of like accountability back into it. Like, is that something that you think is important?
Yeah, that's interesting that you see it as moral accountability, which is wonderful. And again, I've made the piece of media, you're now seeing it and looking at it in the way that you do, which I find so interesting. What I loved about Inara, and that I was working with Amanda, who is the player who ran Inara, was that Inara wanted to be an assassin and do everything except for kill people. You know, is like she liked the idea of jumping around and flipping and like riding her skateboard and being cool and being sneaky and being part of a club. But the actual killing of people is something that is really difficult. And if you're targeted to do this thing and you go up to this person and you're like, oh, I'm going to stab you, and then you stab them, that is an emotional moment. So I didn't even think about moral accountability. It was just like, you have consequences to what you do.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing was that she was haunted by it. But when I talk about consequences, is like everything needs to have an effect, right? So when she killed that person and was then haunted, there was tied to that she had an item that had like some spiritual stuff going on and was related to however spirits and ghosts work in this world. So I was thinking, I was just like, it would be interesting, the fact that you can turn yourself into a ghost with this item, and then you are literally dealing with someone's spirit and taking it away from their body. So I liked the idea that this item was then, she was then this ghost. Like, she then became the spirit, which was her first kill. So it's not even about moral accountability. It's more like, and maybe this is exactly the same thing, and if you think about this in a karmic sense, which in so many ways, cause and effect and karma are very similar, is that when you do something, there is an effect and you need to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's the storytelling element to it. It's like, all right, if you stole from somebody, you're not just going to get away with it. You probably are going to have to run away from that person who's going to try to get their gold back, and now they have a grudge. And like, what could happen later in the story that would further that? I feel like as a dungeon master, I have like a narrative accountability, which is also tied to moral accountability because of how they see themselves as good people or not good people.
I
think Inara in this situation, she saw herself as a good person who also killed people, which is a strange thing to think of yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a better way to put it than that consequences, because the consequence there is not saying you did a bad thing. It's saying your character is going to struggle with that decision, right?
Yes.
Like she could have been some super hardened character who was like, yep, I did it. And it wouldn't have made sense to have the haunting, but she's like pretty soft in a lot of ways, even though she's trying to be tough. And so like,
exactly.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
In that fact, like that person was a bad person. That person like was killing other people. That person was like, it was pretty much a hit. Like it was in the contract. So it wasn't like she just did it for fun. She had to do it, but she had to wrestle with the fact that this was something that she wanted to be a part of and was kind of her job.
Mm. It was pretty brutal how it happened, though.
Listen, that was also the dice rolls. Like I don't want to spoil too much, but it's like it was this very tense moment where they were hiding and trying to get the jump on this person who was also like in the middle of kidnapping one of their friends. So I'm like, all right, you guys need a roll to stay hidden and sneak. And if I remember correctly, like one of them like rolled really poorly on their stealth check. So it's like, all right, Johnny is about to sneeze. What do you do? And are you able to save that? So it's like in this part, something that I've heard from another dungeon master I respect is Brennan Lee Mulligan, who runs Dimension 20. He says it's very much like this good cop, bad cop thing, where it's like, I would love to help you out, but you know, my partner here, the 20 sided die, he's crazy. Who knows what he'll do? And so it's like, in some ways, it is out of my hands. It's whatever the dice says.
Yeah. This is kind of a side note, but I feel like it ties into some of the stuff we're talking about as far as like playing bad characters, right? Or like being fans of evil characters in shows or movies. And this is something I've been thinking about lately, but what do you think about like people getting really into like, they like really like Stormtroopers or like the New Order in Star Wars or the Death Eaters. And we sell all this merch connected to it. I feel weird about it. I don't like it.
So I think it's worthwhile, and I'm so happy to come on this podcast and like say, like, I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. I ascribe to all of these things. My Jewishness is a big part of my storytelling, and in various ways, the cosmology of my worlds is pushed forward by my Jewishness.
Okay, I'm going there, so I'm glad you want to talk about that too. But
no, I very much do, and my Jewishness is a very big part of all the storytelling that I do. Like, my God of Death, and who you'll meet, my God of Death and Time, is very much a Jewish grandpa, and or at least affects the Jewish grandfather voice to get over on people. So that is something that I made very consciously, that he is like the Zadie who wants to get one over you and pretends to be old in order to, even though they are wizened. So that's just like an example of the cosmology. And also just like in the first campaign, like the god, there is a god of birth and creation, a god of living, and a god of death, which I feel like those three are very separated within Jewish faith. Like the idea of there are like birth, living, and death are all very separate and important in their own way, and they are controlled by different things. And I pulled in from a bunch of different other religions as well to create this. But they were all Hebrew words. It was Adama, Zeol, and the God of Creation. I forget because we didn't meet them so much. I forgot. I got totally sidetracked by my Jewishness. Tell me the question again.
Like being super into Death Eaters or Stormtroopers or...
Yes. So the part of that which worries me is like, hey, those are just straight up Nazis,
yes,
guys.
Yes.
Like they're just, in Star Wars, they are explicitly Nazis, and I don't trust anything J.K. Rowling does right now. But like, I don't know how much more like people who want their blood to be pure is more than like pure, than like Nazis.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know why people would get into evil things like that. It's one thing if we're talking about like an anti-hero, like from maybe Breaking Bad. That is a very interesting thing because this is someone who is put in a really tough situation and chooses the thing that we understand to be evil, which is drug running and creating and all the things surrounding the drug life and drug trafficking. But he does it. He first does it to save himself and save his family, but then slowly descends into just like only doing it for himself. And I find that journey, the character growth of that, and it is very interesting. And like, I don't know if anyone likes the character of Walter White.
Yeah,
but like we can respect the journey.
Yeah, I mean, and you, when he's like, "Say my name," or whatever, you're like, "Damn!" But it doesn't.
Yeah,
it's like you're still not like, "I want to be that guy." You know, I don't know.
Like, I can think he's a badass, but I don't want to be like, that's my role model. It's Walter White.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, if it's, that's my same exact thought is like, this is just Nazis in different clothing, right? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, maybe, yeah, their clothing looked really cool. The Nazis' clothing looked really cool. Like, they're honestly like the good design aesthetics. And it's like, that doesn't mean it's cool to copy it. You know, I don't know. Like, I think when it really struck me was I walked into Star Wars Land at Disneyland, and there's like all the stores are like in world, you know, kind of, which is super cool. And so all, you know, the food places are themed and all that stuff. And it's a very cool idea. It's more immersive. But there's like literally like a recruiting stand or whatever it's supposed to be, but it's like the New Order thing, and it's a whole store, and you're like, join up with us, and it gives me the creeps, and I don't like it.
That doesn't make any sense to me because of like Star Wars, it's so explicit that they're Nazis.
Yeah.
Right? It's like from the color scheme to like the fact that the Stormtroopers are literally clones and supposed to be like faceless, and they're just nothing. And that's like part of the whole journey of the new trilogy.
Yeah.
Too, or at least the Rian Johnson one. I won't speak of the other ones. But you know, it's like people aren't even aware of the story that is right in front of them. And I think that that becomes more of an irresponsibility of the marketing team. I mean, like, if you're just doing, like, let's create as much Harry Potter or Star Wars stuff as possible and not realize what you're promoting, I mean, that's just, like, capitalism is kind of just, like, giving a finger to what the story actually is. Yeah. And, like, I'm not surprised.
Like, I think it's interesting someone wanting to, like, be like, I feel like I'm House Slytherin or something, and that's a complicated thing in that story. Like, Harry's almost put in Slytherin, like, not all Slytherin are bad. Like, that's an interesting, complex character wrestling with, you know, your own demons. Death Eaters are just straight up like, yep, I'm a Nazi. So,
yeah. Even, and I could even go further talking about the houses. We have a Harry Potter podcast on our on Multitude Potter list that I've been on, and is very good. It's a 27-year-old man reading Harry Potter for the first time and, like, looking at it with very fresh eyes. And, like, the house system, especially from what J.K. Rowling has said, is just kind of like sorting people into really easy boxes to as a narrative device. Is like, okay, you have the good people, the bad people, the big nerds, and, like, the people who like to eat.
Like, that's she it. Said that?
Well, no, she didn't say that, but, like, you get that from everything. I don't even think it's complex. It's like, and, like, the idea of the sorting hat is, like, it knows everything, but if you hope hard enough, it will put it in whatever you want. Like, just the idea of sorting people into boxes and them never actually being able to leave the boxes. Like, there are... I don't think there are, like, any good Slytherin. Like, there really aren't in the narrative of the books.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, it's much like a Myers-Briggs. People want to be told what they're sorted into. So, like, oh, I want to be sorted into Slytherin because I see myself as cunning. Like, fine. But in the narrative of the books, there are no good Slytherins. Yeah. Like, there are no redeeming qualities. So, like, if you're doing it for your children's book, okay, but it is irresponsible when you go and look farther from there when you're trying to turn the Hogwarts houses into a Myers-Briggs, or just, like, trying people wishing that they were in a particular group and just, like, appealing to that tribalism.
Yeah, there's been all this, like, extra world building around it where, you know, you can fill out things and get sorted, where I think it is more complex at that point. But yeah, in the story, the closest thing you have to a good Slytherin is Harry almost goes there.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Hey, everyone. If you're already supporting the show through Patreon, thank you so very much. If you aren't yet, I wanted to let you know that you can now become a patron and support the show for as little as $5 a month. Becoming a patron can provide you with a variety of perks, including access to additional content like song lyric breakdown episodes, Q&A episodes where you can submit questions for me to answer, additional conversation episodes that won't show up in the public feed, and access to our Discord board where we're building community and engaging in deeper conversations around the show. Here's a sneak peek at some additional patron-only content.
So put your faith and more than steel. So put this ultimate orientation of yourself in something more than that.
Which I think that there's application there in a sense, like, you know, these physical material things, they can be stolen, they can be destroyed. There's a spiritual reality that can't be done to that. But I also really like thinking about it now in terms of a metaphor for the way that we try to approach spirituality or life in general, in that steel thing being akin to certainty. Like, the way that we want, like, it's like, we feel like if we can wrap up the things that we care about in this super strong safe of a thing, then they'll be safe.
If you're digging this podcast and want to join me and others like you in our pursuit of the good, the true, and the beautiful, then joining us on Patreon is the best way to do it. Sign up today at patreon.com/carrythefirepod. All right, let's get back to the show.
What are you doing at Multitude? Like, what's going on there? What's the idea?
So Multitude is a podcast collective and studio. That means that we are a bunch of people who came together that all made our shows together, and we now lean on each other for economic and social work, and we've all underneath this Multitude banner. The difference between a collective and a network, which you might be usually familiar with, is that a network sells ads for you, but there is some amount of top-down power. Like if you you need to fit into certain specifications, maybe you need to give up a certain amount of your IP, or you need to do what they say to fit in with the entire like construction of the network, and in exchange they'll sell ads for you. With the collective, Amanda, who is our CEO, sells ads for us, but all of us retain 100% of the IP of our shows, which is something really important that we've thought of and worked together on. We have 7 shows in the collective now. I have been a part of at least 3 of them, and it's been really fun to just put all this stuff together. My actual job is head of creative. So my job for all of the shows and for new shows that are coming in is to figure out what makes them the best possible podcast that they are, and do that in pre-production so that people aren't figuring it out on the fly and as they make episodes. So I figure out the structure, how do people talk to each other, all of the episode titles, the episode description, all of the words that surround the podcast itself. We now have like a process for creating shows. So I'm finally getting to like really be able to be as creative as possible and make our shows secretly better than as many other shows you might listen to. And like we have a CEO, Amanda, who plays Inara. Brandon, who played Tracy in the first campaign of Join the Party, is our head of production. So he helps us make everything sound as good as possible, and built this studio, which is super nice. So Multitude is something that I've been waiting so long to do. It's this like great internet creator experiment. It's like when we all tried to get into podcasting when we were out of college, is like we kind of missed the boat where everyone was just giving out free media jobs and free creative jobs. And like no one wanted to give us a job if you didn't have like 5 years of experience, where it's like, well, where do we get the experience? So we learned all these things in all these other jobs and by being on the internet. And now we're like, we're going to do this for ourselves. We're going to own all of our intellectual property. We're going to run our own shows, sell our own ads, go to conventions, do live shows, do panels, and just like do it out. And also the studio component is now we make shows of people who bring projects to us, or we make it like as a Multitude, as an entity, then makes the show. And it is gets complicated because there's like 6 of us and all of us are on different shows and we all own different things. But it basically is just like we make shows that we believe are as open-hearted as we want them to be and invites the audience to come into that open heart. So with Join the Party, it's a big deal for us to teach people how to play Dungeons & Dragons and make it the most accessible show out there. I always say that Join the Party is the most accessible and best-sounding Dungeons & Dragons podcast on the market, because that's what we care so much about and we really think that we can do for other people. Join the Party is the show that I dungeon master. I created an audio sitcom called Next Stop, which I wrote and created, and we just finished the 10 episode season 1 run. I was also the co-host of Horse, which is a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. I just stepped away from that to do more multitude related stuff. But yeah, I really love all the shows on our collective, and I believe in them and how much we want people to like be a part of the nerdy thing that we're really exploring.
That's awesome. That's a good segue into something else I want to talk about, which is Join the Party is very trying to be open-hearted, and I see that in the way that it is being very inclusive. So there's gay characters. It starts with a gay wedding. There's non-binary characters. What inspired you to want to make sure that representation was a big part of what you were doing?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that we achieve that in 2 ways. One is from like a podcast accessibility perspective. We have transcripts of all of our episodes. We release mono versions of all of our episodes so the most number of people can listen to it as possible. Mm-hmm. We also teach people how to play Dungeons & Dragons to try to tear down some of the gatekeeping around probably the nerdiest game out there and the requirements that you need to be a specific type of person in order to play Dungeons and Dragons. So we spend a lot of time in teaching and accessibility from the podcast, from the jump. From the story should be for everyone. Like I feel so strongly about this that like how can people connect to a story that doesn't consider them worthy of being told? Like, you need to bring as many people as possible into the party. So I spend a lot of time, like, trying to include as many genders and sexualities as possible. I really try to remove all of the fantasy race from everything as possible, because there's some, like, really deep-seated, and I could go on about this forever, but, like, really deep-seated racial-coded stereotypes in Dungeons & Dragons and all high fantasy. But, like, trying to remove the fact that, like, orcs, just, you have darker skin and you're bad is just, like, a kind of a blanket statement there. But also, like, from J.R.R. Tolkien and reinforced by other fantasy things out there, like, dwarves and hairy creatures are just straight-up Jews and abuse all of the stereotypes that Jews are is also something that really bothers me, and I really try to rip away from that. So it's just trying to bring as many people into the story to see themselves and, like, have a good time. In the second campaign, we're doing a modern storytelling version. We're doing a modern superhero inflected story. So then it becomes like, you need, if you're in a, it is set in upstate New York that, like, flourishes in an alternate universe that, like, there is a mad scientist has discovered a new renewable energy source, which turns a very small town in upstate New York into, like, a metropolis, a futuristic metropolis the size of Portland. So it is important to be like, what is it like for there to be a city in New York State that brings in all of these people, and especially brings in a lot of New Yorkers who, in the canon of the story, left after 9/11 and also is connected to New York City by a high-speed rail. So it's like, how does the city grow? Who are all of the different people within this story? And I am a straight, cis, white, male, Jewish, but still all of those other things. So I really try to make it as open as possible, and I'm not putting on anyone's voice, and I'm not, like, doing it, trying to make anything, like, explicitly, like, racially coded, because I'm not going to put those words in my mouth. The number of bad African accents that I've heard in fantasy stories is just, from white guys, just makes me want to pull my fucking hair out. But really just making the space to have as many, like, types of possible people as possible. I mean, in a podcast, like, who knows what they look like? Like, we do have some explainers, but and sometimes I set characters as, like, specific races, but you can see them as you want to see them. Like, it is up to you to view them in the eye that you would like. And hopefully I've made it as universal as possible for you to see yourself in this and really try to make it as open as possible.
So let's swing back to talk more about the way that you bring your Jewishness into the game. I listened to the Spirits episode, which is another one of your guys' podcasts, which is fun.
It's a mythological dive into, it's a boozy dive into myths and legends seen from a queer and feminist lens. I love that show. It's so good.
So I listened to the episode that you were on talking about Passover, which was really cool. So that gave me an insight kind of into, like, some of how you grew up with this stuff, but I'm curious how much of, you were talking about following, Rabadanya, and I'd just love to hear a little bit about, like, your spiritual life and the way that that's impacted how you do all of this too.
For sure. So I had a very active Jewish upbringing. I went to a Jewish summer camp every single summer from when I was 10 to 24. Or maybe it was even earlier. I think maybe it was 8 to 22. It was, like, over 13 or 14 summers.
That's awesome.
I was also, like, trained as a Jewish educator. I was a part of Jewish youth group in the conservative realm of Judaism. And I knew a lot. I thought about this stuff a lot and what it meant to be Jewish and what it meant to be part of Jewish communities. And then since then, I have not been as explicit to follow up and going to synagogue as much, but my Jewishness is a very large part of my identity and how I see stories and how I see the world. Being able to put parts of that into my storytelling, whether it is, like, Jewish characters who, like, I view as being these particular, like, not maybe Jewish archetypes to me, like, fast-talking, opinionated, like, getting to the point, driving stuff forward, which are the types of characters that I gravitate towards anyway. I love being a part of them and putting them explicitly into these stories. I also think that, like, the storytelling and the stories that surround Judaism are incredibly interesting to me. Like, the story of the Golem, the story of Passover, just to name two that have affected me greatly. Like, I love the fact, the story of the Golem is so incredibly impactful to me. Just the idea that when Jews are in trouble, they can create something to defend themselves that is, and then is brought to life by words and by the word of God. And the idea that you can create something that defends you and, when you most need it is also incredibly, like, powerful to me, especially in these incredible times where, like, you need to just be aware of Nazis again. Wasn't expecting that, yeah. But I would love there to be a Golem again to, like, to just kind of punch some Nazis in the face that these who are bothering the protesters, you know? Yeah, so I see my Jewishness as an indelible part of me, and that inherently gets into my storytelling.
So you created in season one, you've got this kind of Trinity, which you were talking about, of like birth, life, death, and then Johnny's character. I mean, the religion plays like a big part in the story because Johnny is this kind of evangelist guy for a god or a force called the Undying Light, and I feel like you guys put a lot of thought into what's going on in this. And I think later on he starts. I mean, I'm not finished with the first campaign, but starts talking about like. This light being, you know, something that even precedes these kind of persons of the Godhead in this. Like, how much of that is you trying to speculate on, you know, the nature of reality as it really might be?
Yeah, man, you got me. I think it's interesting in Dungeons & Dragons where, and much like in Greek mythology, the gods walk among us in this way, right? Like, they are tangible people, or like they're a thing instead of just this omniscience that you might see in the Father and the Holy Spirit in Christianity, or in Jewishness, just in Judaism. Just the general idea of God is all around us and not like a person. So I thought it was interesting to explore that idea that there is some sort of like omniscient, omnipresent force that has been lost to time. Like, no one practices the religion of the Undying Light. Like, I assume that there was once at one point, but the fact that like Johnny also gets powers from being a warlock, and the way that the relationship is between of a warlock and a patron that gives you the power, I just found incredibly interesting. It's also like a very Dungeons & Dragons thing. Like, there are planes of existence that are like outside of the gods, and like are even more intangible than like the gods themselves. So I think that there is like a light, there was like a lightness and a darkness that surrounds the three who are in many ways, going back to our original conversation, like neutral. Like they create, or they run the world, or they take people who have died. Like it is neither like good or bad. It is neither like active or passive. It just is the way that it is. In my head, a character, the god of living, Adama, is just. She, in my head, she was just like an 80s businesswoman, just like running reality, you know, like she was just responsible for getting getting everything there on time and just doing it. Like, it just happens. And I think that's like, if there was a personification of these specific aspects of life, is like, you know, there is no goodness and badness. It is what it is. So I like the idea that there is this like ephemeral, undying light goodness.
Okay.
And then there is the there is the shadow, because there is always a shadow to light, and they must goodness and badness must coexist in this way.
That's awesome.
These are such great questions. I love talking about shit like this. Like I just, it's so nice.
Tell me if you want to talk more about this, but so you grew up in the conservative, kind of camp in, Judaism. There's Orthodox, conservative, and,
Reformed.
And Reformed would be kind of most to the left in a sense, yeah?
Yeah, it's not really on political sort of lines.
Yeah.
It is more like Orthodox does everything by the book
uh-huh.
to be very reductive about it. Orthodox follows the Torah and everything that it lays out the most. And Reform is about looking at what it means to be Jewish in the 20th and 21st century, which is like more English, more connecting with your religion in a modern sense, and things like that. Well, I think conservative is somewhere in the middle that wrestles with those two things together. Mm-hmm. I think that the best way to think about this is... the rabbis of modern conservative, like in the late 20th century, they wrestled over whether or not you could turn on a light bulb on Shabbat. And the whole thing about Shabbat is that it's a day of rest. You don't work. Mm-hmm. So we have this whole conversation is electricity work? Mm. Traditionally, electricity would be considered to be work because it is like you are creating, you are turning something on. But also there have been other interpretations that like we use electricity for leisure and we should be able to turn things on and off because it is to our benefit, right? In conservative Judaism, there are two tracts that say you can turn on a light bulb and you cannot turn on a light bulb. And the fact that there are two, both of these, and they're both accepted as you can just like figure it out in your way, I think is exactly what, how conservative Judaism really shakes out.
Well, that's it seems like a bit of a microcosm too of the larger, at least from my understanding. So I come from like a kind of conservative evangelical background. But what I've really appreciated learning more about, so like, and part of that entailed like a certain view of the scriptures and if, and a certain way to interpret them. And,
for sure.
What I've, really come to admire and be like jealous of in the Jewish world is the ability to disagree and argue about all these interpretations without like breaking faith with each other, without like splitting off and being like, no, you are anathema. It's
like we're not gonna go out and create like a whole different sect of our religion. It's more about I still don't know what Episcopalian what it means to do that. I just like, I guess there's another one. Like I can't keep track of all of the different sects of Christianity. So I understand. There's also a whole thing in Judaism about arguing with each other. Like that is inherently what the rabbis did. They argued and maybe they would figure it out and maybe they wouldn't. And that's also something I really prize about myself and is hard in the United States, which I do see to be like a Christian country, to being the kind of person who wants to argue.
Yeah, I also like arguing. I think I would have been better off there in some ways. But even in the Talmud, it's like it's containing the argument. It's like Rabbi this says this, Rabbi this says this, and they're on the page right next to each other. Yeah, Christianity has really, really lost that ability. Someone saying that Judaism looks at like the scriptures as a question to be answered, and Christianity looks at them as a declaration to be proclaimed. So once it's a declaration, you've oversimplified it because you basically are saying that there's no other interpretations that can be valid, and I just need to say it. Whereas there's a humility to the Jewish approach of saying, yeah, it's real hard to figure out what this says sometimes or what we're supposed to do with it. Yeah. And I dig that.
Yeah, I think that sometimes people don't like the complications of that and they want someone to have come to tell them what the true nature is. Mm-hmm. And like probably why so many people responded to Jesus, huh? This charismatic dude who took Judaism and then said like, no, this is the way it is. And I'm the son of God and I can tell you those things. And that's why it's caught on in so many different ways, why it's caught on so much.
Yeah, I want to ask, do you have any consistent practices or habits that are helpful for you?
Just in general?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, it could be absolutely anything.
No,
Friday nights, I go get a beer with my buddies or whatever.
Actually, honestly, the thing that's been helping me the most during the quarantine is that every Wednesday, I've been watching reality TV with my friends. And like keeping myself on a schedule has really been anchoring my week. Like I know every single week when it's Wednesday because that's when I watch the Challenge and Survivor with my friends. And I know.
Wait, is Survivor on right now?
Well, when Survivor was going, we were watching. Okay. The challenge is currently still going.
What is the challenge?
It's the MTV Road Real World Road Rules Challenge. Do you remember that from like all the way back in the day?
Yeah.
It's like morphed.
Is it back
it's
on?
Like morphed into something like totally insane, and is just like it is the best sport that's going on right now. And I love it. I have like a fantasy draft with my best friend, and like we watch it perpetually, and it's beautiful. But yeah, that's something that's been really locking me in. I've also been really pushing myself to create as much as possible. I've been seeing, like, I know it's not explicitly helping, and I know in everything that's been happening, both with the quarantine and with the protests, I'm doing this in different ways, but I feel like being able to have access to this studio that I've been running for my job in general, and I live like four blocks away, so this is part of like my quarantine space, and the only people who use it are me and my partner. Being able to create something regularly and put it out has been, I felt like it's like a victory garden, you know? It's like, I'm just doing this, and like, I'm not taking food away from the boys overseas. Like, I'm just making this podcast, and hopefully it gives people a sense of lightness for just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I started up a quarantine podcast called What's Your Favorite Pokemon? And Then I Say Something Nice About You, where like for like 12 weeks in a row, I just wanted to talk to one of my friends about a Pokemon they liked, and then I said something nice about them. And then people could listen to that and hear the fact that I've done this with my friend, and hopefully it gives them a little bit of lightness as well. So, like, I've just been really trying to create. I also, like, I know that's the opposite of, like, meditation and mindfulness, but I have spent so much time trying to carve out a space for myself where people... and not just like listeners and the audience, and I love the people who love Multitude Shows. They're beautiful, wonderful people. But like being respected enough for someone to give me the ability to like be a creative person and to trust my creative instincts. Like the fact that I'm now the head of creative at a fledgling podcast company means so much to me that like I love creating, and I'm really trying to keep myself like on a constant like schedule to just like keep making stuff.
That's cool. And you just put out yesterday a like reskinning for If You Want to Play D&D, but as like superhero stuff. Yeah.
Yes, I did. I'm so proud of that. I had all of these ideas of what we've been talking about so much is removing the high fantasy from Dungeons and Dragons, which leaves you with just the game mechanics. And how do you put a different skin on top of that? So there's like a lot of game philosophy in there. There's also like I've deconstructed each of the classes into what they actually mean while you're playing them. Like, what is in, like, if you want to play a fighter, you just want to be someone who does damage, and like that's your contribution. But like also, if you're a rogue, you're not just a sneaky person, you want to be someone who's very good at a specific set of skills, and like that is also kind of the what it reveals about you and what kind of class you gravitate towards. But also then I've come up with like some superhero inspired subclasses, and I've created some new items. So like if you want to play a chronomancer who sees Dungeons and Dragons just like the world is and life is a story, and you can pick and choose and turn through the book of life like you would be able to mess with a Dungeons and Dragons game. Like, that is a very different way of looking at the game that I would love to bring into your story if that's something that you're interested in.
Yeah, that's cool. I think even the fact that you're doing that, I think the high fantasy actually is a big part of what puts a lot of people off from D&D is like, I don't like stuff like that. And it's like, it's not really the point. Like, it's just a big sandbox to play in, and it happens to be this, and it doesn't have to be. And so it's cool to have resources, I think, to do stuff like that. Do you, the stuff that's in that booklet, is that stuff that's available like for like D&D Beyond, like homebrew stuff on there? Like, can you use that?
Yeah, you can use it in your homebrew, totally. I mean, you can just buy the guide and use it. Like, I've play tested it. I think that it's not broken. Like, feel free to use it. All you have to do is go to the Join the Party merch page and just buy it. For D&D Beyond, I don't really use those tools, and I don't know how much Dungeons & Dragons, the company, would like that someone is writing something that removes the high fantasy from it. So, like, if you can put it in with your own game, I just don't think D&D has not rubber stamped it. But the way that Dungeons & Dragons, I mean, the game itself is out of their hands in so many ways. Like, there is an open gaming license for me for people to create things that are powered by the game. So, like, feel free to use this and to use this as a guide to help you out. It's called No Capes, which is my Incredibles reference that I smuggled in there.
That's good. Anyway, it was really, really great to talk to you. And I appreciate you taking the time, man.
Absolutely. This is so nice to come on. I just want to say the way that this happened was like you emailed me and was like, can you talk about Dungeons and Dragons? Because I like your show. And like, I don't know how much more flattering of an invitation that could be for me. So I really appreciate this. And being able to talk, I don't get the chance to talk about my religious stuff, something that being a Jew has been... like something I've been really, I don't even want to say wrestling with, but like pushing to the fore in my brain over the last few years, you know, Nazis do that to you. So it's really meaningful to me to talk about how Dungeons and Dragons and storytelling is intertwined with my Jewishness. And I really appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, Eric, tell us where people can find out what's going on with you.
Wonderful. I'm the head of creative at Multitude Productions. You can find me on Twitter at EL_Silvero, S-I-L-V-E-R-O. That is my name if I was a Lucha Libre wrestler with an underscore in the middle. You can also listen to all of my shows, Join the Party, which we've primarily talked about, which is the most accessible and best-sounding Dungeons & Dragons podcast out there. The first campaign is this high fantasy, kind of like pop culture-y inspired story, but the newest campaign is a modern superhero kind of powered story that I've been so stoked about and so much fun to run. I also wrote and created the audio sitcom Next Stop, which has all 10 episodes out. You can also just find that, just put Multitude into your podcast player and you can see all of our shows, or you can just put Join the Party or Next Stop into your podcast player. You can also find us on the internet at multitude.productions. We have tons of free resources about podcasting. So if you want to get into it and you need a place to start, we can help you with pretty much anything. And go buy No Capes, which is the guide that we were talking about. I'll send you a link so you can put it in the episode description.
All right, man. Well, be well. Maybe once COVID's over and I'm out your way, we can grab a beer or something.
Absolutely. I would love that. That would be so fun.
If you have a moment today, it would help a ton if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with a friend. Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at CarryTheFirePod.
I want to thank my producer, Andy Lara, and all of our executive producers,
Chris Reeves, Tony Panaro, Sam George, Brandon Valencia, Reed Duchess, Thomas Fortcourt, Shamir Hassan, Amy Armstrong, Luis Rivera, Gabe Munoz, Cameron Lane, Michael Maitland, Andrew Diaz, Adam Collins, Susanna Coleman, Ian Hunt, John Paul Diego, David Cobb, Jess Card, Mark Weiss, Brianna Webb, John Buchan, Denise Sagita, Colin Hawthorne, Brian Weisbecker, Joshua Malara, Eric Gonzalez, Matthew Alcon, Tiffany Payne, and Sean Weidmeyer.
Thank you all so much for carrying the fire with me, and I'll see you next time.